This is the MagicWordPodcast.com.
Hello, this is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com. This week we are going to hear a few stories about the fire in Lahaina, which was on the island of Maui, Hawaii, that took place last year. This was a devastating fire that actually destroyed many homes and businesses, and there were over 100 people who were killed in that wildfire. It was just horrific. And one of the businesses that was destroyed was Warren and Annabelle's, which was one of the most, if not the most, popular visitor site for tourists who would come to Lahaina to visit. It was high on TripAdvisor and on Yelp, and it featured some wonderful magicians. It included John George and John Chirac, Dana Daniels, and Chris Blackmore. And Chris is my guest here today to talk a little bit about what it was like, because he was actually there. What was kind of interesting by comparison, when this actually took place in August of 23, I was at Magic Live, and I had just done a podcast episode with Dana Daniels, and he was talking about how much he enjoyed working at Warren and Annabelle's and looking forward to getting back to it. And then the next day, he had learned that it had been devastated and destroyed by fire. And so he was hearing about it from afar, hearing about it there in Las Vegas. And the person that we're talking to today, Chris Blackmore, was actually there, and he was about to perform. He was working with John George, and John was going to be leaving, and he was taking his place. Anyhow, they were there, and there are a lot of stories on the scene and what it was actually like. And he goes into a lot of details about how horrible that the situation was. Also, kind of an update, I guess, on where they are today. And I think it's kind of interesting to take a look back on something that had happened a little over a year ago, and for you to get some of the details that you had not heard about until now. So I'm going to introduce my guest. This is someone, by the way, who I had an opportunity to sit down and chat with when I was at Charles Box Wonders Theater recently, when I was at the Magic at the Beach convention in Myrtle Beach, and which is a great convention. I recommend that you consider going to it next year. It's a small convention, but they have just a dynamic lineup year after year and the most wonderful location for holding a convention. Anyhow, that aside, please welcome my guest this week, Mr. Chris Blackmore, here on The Magic Word. I have a fellow with me here right now who is a very interesting dude and has a very interesting past as far as a lot of magic where he's performed. And in particular, I was interested in hearing a lot of the stories he has to talk about Warren and Annabelle's, where he worked for such a long time up to the last moment. And he has stories up to that last moment because he was there. We were, some of you might recall, listening to Dana Daniels talking about, we were talking to him at the Magic Live, and then the day that it happened, he was talking about how excited he was to go back to Warren Annabelle's the next day, all that happened, and I chatted with him again there. It was one of the daily reports for the convention, and it was just such a sad time. But there are a lot of good times and things that we can talk about, and I've got with me from San Diego, Chris Blackmore. Hey there, Chris.
Hi, Scott. Hi, magic enthusiasts. How you doing?
And so I'm doing fantastic. Thank you very much. And you were first starting, and you said at Wizards. Now, a long time ago, what was the guy's name who was the manager at Wizards?
Fred Wood was.
When
I was there, yeah. I think we were talking about how I first met Warren. Warren Gibson, who is the owner, or was the owner of Warren and Annabelle's. I should clarify, is still the owner of Warren and Annabelle's, but Warren and Annabelle's no longer exist because of the Lahaina fires. But Warren was doing close-up, and I used to do close-up up there. I did stage work also with my wife. We were Blackmore and Gold.
Which is when I first met you at the Magic Island.
Yes, that's right.
Back in the 80s, I think.
Yeah, back in the 80s. Blackmore and Gold. She's still my wife. We're still happily married, but we don't. She doesn't perform anymore. And so Warren remembered me, and I had spoken to Dana, because there's... We have a little time, right, on this thing? Let's go back. I was working at Disney World in Orlando, Florida.
Yeah.
I didn't know Dana, but he was working at the Golden Horseshoe in Anaheim, California, at Disneyland. And this is back just as cell phones came out.
Bette Bergeron was working at the Golden Horseshoe in Orlando.
Yes, there were three incarnations of the show. The first one Walt brought over, the second one Bev was in, and the third one, which was the Diamond Horseshoe Saloon Review and Medicine Show, that was the show I was in.
That wasn't Wally Bogue.
No, it wasn't Wally. Wally
was in Anaheim.
Yeah, I don't think he ever went over to Florida.
Okay.
Dana's your expert on that.
Yeah, he is.
Yeah, and so my wife and I went out there, and we had a six-month contract. We did Illusions in the show, and around the seventh month, they renewed our contract. Around the seventh month, she didn't want to perform anymore because we had two little babies, and she just wanted to be a mom, and I was totally supportive of that, and so I ended up going solo over there. But the point being—
Were the babies twins?
No, they weren't.
Oh,
no, they're 17 months apart. They were both in diapers, and we didn't know.
Right.
We didn't know what it took, you know, and we're doing shows. And, oh, I got other stories. But anyway, so this is when cell phones were brand new, and it cost a lot of money to call.
To make calls. Oh, my gosh. Yeah, I remember that. Yeah, so much per minute.
But Disneyland had a hot phone, or Disney World, they had a hot phone that connected the two parks. West Coast Park to
Anaheim.
The East Coast Park. Yeah.
That you could call for free, basically.
You could call for free. So I was able to pick up, and I introduced myself to Dana. We met, we chatted, we ended up becoming great friends. And I ended up working at Wizards for a while, doing close-up. I honestly don't really remember Warren from there too much. Mm-hmm. I kind of do.
Because he was also working Wizards.
He was working Wizards, but he is a finger flinger. He has his chops down. He does a watch deal like nobody else. He once had a whole table, took all their watches. And I'm based more on comedy. Mm-hmm. I don't do a ton of slights don't do many at all. Long story short, Dana goes, yeah, I'm working at a place out in Maui. And my wife and I were taking a vacation out there. Mm-hmm. And I asked, would you mind if I contacted Warren? Dana said, no worries. And so I contacted Warren, and he remembered me. And
said, Wizards. Wow.
From Wizards. Okay. And I said, great. He says, yeah, do 20 minutes. And I said, okay. So
was this the beginning of when Warren's had just opened? Or
no, Warren opened... It would have been the 25th anniversary this year in March.
Okay. Reason I ask is because I know that some other guys tried to get in there, but they were good magicians also, but Warren was very particular.
Warren is extremely particular, and we can get into that. Yeah. Extremely loyal, too.
Yeah.
He was a great boss. So I went out, I did 20 minutes. I remember it killed. It was a good thing. And I worked the audience. That's what I do. I do improv, a lot of improv. And Warren liked that. Mm-hmm. And, I don't know, maybe a year later, he said, why don't you come out and do a week? And I did a week with Dana.
Okay.
I opened for Dana, did an hour.
And you were working in the ante room, and then Dana was in the inside?
No, this is the same. They only have, for a description, for those who haven't been to Warren and Annabelle's, it's a beautiful club. It was on Front Street in Lahaina. Elegant, almost a speakeasy feel inside. Mm-hmm. Very beautifully done. It was a classy environment. Mm-hmm. And you come in and you enjoy the lounge. They had Annabelle. She was the ghost piano, very similar to Irma. At the Magic Castle. And... let me think for a second. So you go there, you have some cocktails, you have food if you want, and then you are led into the showroom.
But there's nobody doing magic in that area?
No one's doing magic in that area, no. Annabelle is the attraction that area.
Okay, gotcha.
But they wanted them just to drink and eat and relax and have some chat time so that when they came into the show, they were enthused and ready to go.
Oh,
yes.
Smart.
It worked tremendously. And so they come in there, and it was a beautiful 88 seat theater, a couple different configurations because they had back rows. It was intimate. It had a close-up table. It had a whole front area you worked at hip level, and people sat there. They were called the hot seats. So I'm going a long way around to get to where I did. But anyway, I worked a week with Dana, and it was one of the funnest weeks I've ever worked. And afterwards, Warren goes, nah, you two can't work together because—
You're too much fun together.
Yeah. Too much comedy, not enough magic. Now, I'm not disparaging myself or Dana in any way. We have strong magic, but we are not
the finger flingers,
right? And Warren wanted that element in his show because he combined both of them. And he did the full 2 hours. That was 16 years ago, and Warren's place had opened about 9 years prior to that. Mm-hmm. He had had Kerry Pollack in there for a while. Kerry helped him build it.
Build it, right. I had him sitting right where you are last year. We talked about this very thing.
How funny. Yeah. And then he brought Dana in for relief. And then Warren, you know, he was doing two shows a night, six nights a week. The place was sold out. It was popular. That's not how it started.
So what are they, like 6 and 9, or what were the show times?
Shows were...
dinner and everything.
Yeah, you'd come in at 5 and start dinner, and the first show was like 7:30, and the second show was around 9:30 and 10. They fluctuated a little
bit. But they had dinner late also.
Yeah, they had a late day. So while we're doing the first show,
people are eating.
The other guests are coming in and eating and relaxing.
Yeah.
And then so it was kind of neat the way he designed it. So the guest exiting the theater, everyone would see them exit at a different kind of location. Mm-hmm. And they would meet and greet the performers, and they're laughing and they're cheering and they're high-fiving and things like that. So it really set up the second audience.
Sure.
Really, really nice.
So they're thinking, wow, I'm going to be seeing a great show here.
Yeah.
Right.
So long story short, Warren started slowly taking more time off, and our numbers increased. And probably during the last 7-8 years, we were doing the whole year. Mm-hmm. And that was 4 magicians. Dana and myself were doing the comedy spot, which was the second spot. Mm-hmm. We didn't consider it headlining per se. It was just 2 different acts.
I understand.
And they went in a specific order. And then John George or John Schrock would do the opening. And we worked with, you know, all of them. It was a lot of fun. They were so skilled. They were fun to, mm-hmm. fun to watch and fun to follow. And so we did that for years and years, 6 months, 3 weeks on, 3 weeks off, 3 weeks on, 3 weeks off. We'd go back and forth. Dana and I would wave. It actually kind of just hurt our friendship slightly because we could never see each other.
Right.
You know? We'd see each other at December when the 1 week they would close, or a few days they would close. It was a wonderful venue, just an absolutely wonderful venue. The guests came in. It was not low cost. The guests came in. They had spent some money. They're doing a full evening here. This is a memory for them in Maui. And Warren made sure of that we knew that he didn't care if we were finger flingers or if we were the funniest people in the world. When those guests leave, they better have loved your show. And he wanted us to make missionaries out of them, literal missionaries. He wanted them to tell
spread
everyone.
Spread the word.
Because that's how his business was built.
Yeah.
Lahaina, you've heard the term coconut wireless. It really is a true thing. And it spread across the country. And now I do shows around the world. And I'll mention Warren and Annabelle's, and you'll see hands go up. He had people, had stars, celebrities used to come in there. I remember Warren would do a joke with James Hetfield of Metallica. For those of you who know who he is, he's a huge star in that, and Warren didn't know anything about it. He didn't know anything. So he picked him to borrow $100 bill one time, and Warren, you know, kind of talks like this a little bit, you know. He said, "What do you do?" He goes, "I'm a musician." "A musician?" And he'd do the pizza joke, and he goes, "You know the difference between a musician and a pizza?" "Yeah, pizza can feed a family of 4. Not knowing that James Hetfield is a superstar, and you know, money is not a problem.
Yeah.
And so anyway, James loved it, and he would come back from time to time, and they'd do the pizza joke over. James played it straight, and you know, had no indication, and Warren would go, "What? A band? What kind of band? Would we know your music?" You know? So it was a lot of fun. So it was fun to work there. The shows were fantastic. And then, of course, during the day, you're in Maui.
Yeah.
And Warren treated us great. He gave us a car, and we had a condo. We only had 2 places while we were there. And the second place over the last 8-9 years was on the water, you know, overlooking the water. You wake up, and it just...
But you can't watch a sunset because you're working.
Fun story. Okay. So when John Schrock goes on, or John George ahead of me, the sun is setting, and I'm in the office, and I would often just walk outside and go watch the sunset and come back in and get ready for my show, because it was beautiful, and I'd look out the window every night at the sunset.
Just be thankful, saying, "Boy, look at me, look where I am."
Absolutely, I was very grateful for it. I was, I was blessed to be there, quite honestly.
Yeah. Now, did your wife and family come out, or are you kind of going back and forth still in those 3 weeks on, 3 weeks off?
But yes, mostly back and forth by myself. They would come out, but, you know, money's money, and we're out there to make money. And anytime they come out, it just costs a fortune.
Is your wife working someplace then,
no,
too?
No, my wife is
so
home.
She could. She had the time to come with
you. She had the time to come out. Well, we raise our grandson, so it is a little difficult.
Right.
And, but she came out plenty. And ironically, the day it burned down, or that week, my wife was there. My wife and grandson were there. So it was a fun experience. I was going to have a fun time. We didn't think much of it. The wind was howling, though. The wind was just absolutely howling. Before the fire.
Yeah.
And I was on the eighth floor.
Of the hotel, where you're staying?
Yes. And
because they put you up in a hotel, not into a...
It was a condo.
Okay.
It was a condo, but...
Wasn't a beach house or something?
No, right? Had a full kitchen, bath, one-bedroom condo, just, again, just gorgeous on the water.
Was Warren living there in Lanai, by the way, full-time, or did he live about...
He lived about 10 minutes away. He lived actually right by the hotel we ended up in, condo we ended up in.
Okay.
So
you say the wind was blowing high.
Oh, the wind was blowing hot, absolutely.
And it was... blowing hard enough that you actually remarked about it, started thinking that it was a memory that's like before the fire, even. It's like, wow, this is a high wind.
Quite a bit, because...
like a hurricane force almost, huh?
Yes, yes. So here's kind of how it went. We arrive on Sundays, John George and I. John George was working with me that time. And we arrive on Sundays, go to our condo, and then John and I go in around noon, and we set up our show, all right? Because Dana and John Schrock had just left, so they cleared their stuff out, and we bring our stuff in and set up our show, change our music, et cetera, et cetera. And it was just our Monday ritual. Well, my wife and grandson went with me, and then they walked along Front Street. And for those who aren't familiar with Front Street, it's a touristy street with a lot of
t-shirts,
shops, t-shirts, bubble gumps type things along the street and all that. And Warren and Annabelle's was located right on that street. And she was so grateful to walk down that street because it was one of her favorite things to do. Hmm. And the next day it was gone.
Quite literally. Within 24 hours gone.
So we did our show that night. It was fantastic. It was only a one show night.
What night of the week you say?
Because
Sunday night?
Monday night.
Right. That's right. You say it came in Sunday, so it was Monday night show.
Right, Monday night show. And summers are slower there because we don't cater to kids, and it's family on summer. So we had one show night, so it was kind of an easy night. Had great shows, everything. Wind, wow, this wind is something crazy, right? And we go back to our condo, and next morning we wake up to no electricity. Okay, not uncommon on Maui. That's to happen. So we'll wait a few hours. It'll pop back in. A few hours go by. Nothing. Oh, they have some fires. Okay. That's not uncommon either on Maui to have fires. They have a lot of dry brush. And so we're just going, okay. And we're not thinking much about it. Just let's go about our day. We have no electricity, but whatever. We'll go to the pool. But the wind was so hard. It wasn't even comfortable to swim. Things were flying, starting to fly like chairs and things of that nature.
Mm-hmm.
And, Lisa Gibson, Warren's wife, eventually called and let us know that we're canceling the shows tonight because there's no electricity and they don't know if people are going to get through with the fires and all. They had closed the road. So my wife and I look back and I feel kind of bad about this, but my wife and I said, oh, we have the day off. Why don't we go to the other side of the island?
Okay.
And we were supposed to meet John George later for lunch. And I said, well, I'll call him later and we'll go. And I ended up blowing that out of the water. He got mad at me, but we're fine. So
he stuck around there.
He stuck around and we went on the other side. And it's completely normal over there. We went and played in
no
the ocean.
No wind or anything.
Yeah. We just, well, there was wind, but it wasn't horrible. It seemed to be worse on the dry side of the island. And so we're just having a fun time. And we went around what's called the head of the island. And you don't really go around that way. There's some one-lane roads with steep drop-offs. And it's kind of a locals road. You can go on it, but it's, you know, it can be frightening at times. But we've done it 25, 30 times over the years. And so we went around that way because they had closed the lower road. Play all day. We played all day long. And then we come back to go around the north again because we knew the thing was closed. The south was closed. And a police officer's there and he says, you can't go. And we're like, well, we were over. And he goes, you can't go. You don't know this road. And we explained, we know the road. My wife has medicine. She had a heart attack not long ago and she has some medicine she had to get. So he let us through and we're driving there and we're going, what's going on? It was really.
So the police officer didn't tell you what the issue was and why they were closing off the roads.
No, well, he just said the fire. You said the fire. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, we got around and now we're back where there's no cell phone service at all. There's no cell phone service. Lights are still off, but we can see a glow in the distance from our condo, which is Lahaina. We're about 10 minutes away from Lahaina. Our condo. And so we look over there and it's like, that's right. I still have a picture of it. It's a picture I took on my balcony of the fire. And I go, man, that thing's big. I'm going to go down by the pool because that's the only place we could get reception was right on the beach. Mm-hmm. And I'm getting there and I can't get anything. And a text pops through from Dana and it says Fleetwoods is on fire. And this is
Fleetwoods?
Mick Fleetwood from Fleetwood Mac. Had a club called Fleetwoods and it was on the opposite end of us, so probably three quarters to a mile down the street.
Lahaina, right?
Yeah, on that front street, which is, by the way, all of those buildings were built in the late 1800s, early 1900s. They're all wooden. They were all wooden.
Just matchsticks.
Yeah, they were. And all of Lahaina was matchsticks. They're all these little tiny 700 square foot homes on a 1,000 square foot property, and just tons of them there. And so Dana says, Fleetwood's burning. And I'm like, oh, and that's all I could get. I couldn't text in. I couldn't text out. There was a picture that wouldn't load. I assume he was sending it to Fleetwood's. And I'm like, oh, and we went back up to the condo. And
but Dana wasn't even there. As I said, he was with me in Vegas.
Everyone knew
more. So they were sending stuff to him, and then he was telling you.
People knew more than us because we weren't getting cell phone reception. We had no electricity.
Huh.
And so now we're at the condo. And people are kind of going, what are we doing? Because there's hundreds of tourists there and they have no electricity and no water and all this stuff. And I'm somewhat of a prepper and I actually have a little supply I keep with me. So we were fine. We had food, we had canned food, we had bottled water, we had everything, but no way to cook it except on the barbecues outside. It was so windy, it was almost impossible to barbecue.
Right.
Burgers were flying. They were really funny in a sad
way. This is in a span of what, about 12 hours? Or?
Yeah, about 12 hours. Yeah. And so we went to bed eventually that night, just not knowing what was going on. And the next morning I woke up and I did have some texts on my phone and John George had tried to get a hold of me several times. And so I walked down to his room and knocked on his room and no answer. And I walked back to the elevators and here comes John George pushing a luggage cart.
Mm-hmm.
And I say, what are you doing? He goes, I'm leaving. I go, why? And he goes, it's gone. I go, what's gone? And he says, Warren and Annabelle's is gone. I go, no, it's not gone. It's not gone.
Can't be.
And he's like, Chris, it's gone. And I knew he was in shock because I've known him for years and we're very close. And his face, he was in shock.
Wow.
And I guess I just started becoming in shock. And he showed me Warren's texts because Warren's son, Griffin, was on the island. And he was relaying things back to his dad. And one of them was, we just saw the Shell station explode, the gas station.
Wow.
And so he showed me, and I was still incredulous. I don't understand.
Couldn't accept it.
I couldn't accept it at first. And my wife and I, we just... we're like, oh my goodness. And I go, what are you doing? He goes, I'm going. He goes, I got a reservation on a plane and I'm going. He goes, I'd recommend you get off the island too. And so he left. He went around the north end, the head, and went to the airport. Quick story on him. He got the last flight out, ticket out. And he went to the airport, got on the plane, and there was hardly anyone on the plane because no one could get to the airport.
Oh, interesting.
They were all stuck. They didn't know to go around the north. And if you do go around the north, it can be a challenging drive, and it's
sketchy.
Very slow. Yeah. And
like the road to Lahaina?
A road to Lahaina looks like a piece of cake kind of compared to this one.
Wow.
It's more like the back road going out of Lahaina where you're not supposed, where the rental car companies say, don't take your rental car.
Yeah.
So there's two sections that are literally one car can pass and they go up and there's a cliff on both sides. No, I'm sorry. One side. There's a,
yeah,
the other cliff goes up on the other side. Yeah. So if you meet someone, one of you has to make a decision. Yeah, and back up.
Or go off.
And it's literally, if you were to open your doors and step out and take one step, you're down the cliff. So it's
that narrow. Wow.
Yeah, it's that narrow. So, but you get used to it. You know, yeah. it's not a big deal. You just don't go when it's
so now ready. Some people do not know to go that route, but he knew about going there. So he got on the plane.
He got home and he left some stuff with our good friend, David Kariah. David was one of the new magicians that was coming in there. He's a local on the island and he lived on the other side of the island. Keep your name out, people, for David Kariah.
Kariah. How do you spell that?
K-A-R-U-Y-A, Kariah, yeah.
Is he the one who wrote the book, Jin Ahsoka?
Yes, he did.
He has been in contact with me and he sent me a copy of the book.
He's
and
a wonderful
I think
young
he,
man.
You were in the book, didn't he?
I'm in the book. Yeah. He considers us mentors and he's just a lovely young man and just an excellent magician.
So you're recommending I should follow up on that?
I think you should, Scott, yes. And
I met him at a magic convention, I think at Pebblepalooza or someplace, some close-up place. And yeah, he has some good chops.
Yeah, he's a wonderful guy. And just a nice guy, too. That's the other thing about Warren and Annabelle's. We had four magicians, eventually five magicians in there with David joining us. We never had a disagreement, I think, amongst us the whole time. There was maybe some discussions like, can you not do that trick because I'm doing this?
Yeah.
Other than that, we never had I don't think we ever had disagreements. We never, in the magic community for you know, me 15 years and others 10 years, that's amazing. It just shows Warren was looking for a certain type of individual.
They could work with each other.
Work with each other and work with a crowd and create missionaries and understand that the guest came first.
Right.
I didn't care if you won awards.
I knew that they were like number one on TripAdvisor and on Yelp and everything else, I guess. That's why he wants them to go out and like write good reviews.
Right. Yeah. Write good reviews. And it worked. It was good. I lost track. So anyway.
Oh, so we're talking about, he got on the plane and so you saw him leaving and you were thinking with your wife and grandson, you're going to do what?
And now we're on the side of the island that has no phone service,
right. No
electricity still. We're there for a couple days now. We stay a couple days and we're eating our canned
food. And the fire's out by then?
No, fires are still going. They're still, but it's burned down. Yeah, there's still hot spots and all that, but the worst was over. Yes, the worst
That's
was over.
And
Scott, it was one of the most heartfelt moments of life. Is it wasn't for us, it was for the people of Maui. When we would go out in our car, when we finally left, and I'll retract back what took place before that, but when we finally left and we saw thousands of people standing in line at grocery stores, anything that could sell food or water, because there was none. There was no electricity, so they couldn't open up the major stores. Now, some small shop owners opened up, and, you know, they couldn't take credit cards, so they were taking cash. They were just being generous. They were giving away things, but very quickly, food ran out. Yeah. Water was running out. Again, we were okay because I'm a little bit of a prepper.
And they couldn't get things in either.
Couldn't get things in. No, they couldn't get things in, and it was really tragic. And to hear some of the stories, we had a bartender for the entire time I was there, Adrian, family. This was, they used the term Ohana, Warren and Annabelle's for family. Warren and Annabelle's was family. And that's a hard thing to get these days. We had a great staff. We had great employees. Everyone got along for the most part. Any riffraff had been weeded out.
Right. And they weren't considered employees. They were considered family.
Family and a smooth running ship. And Tom, our manager, was spot on. And Adrian was our bartender. He's the best bartender on the island. Really, just a loving man. Well, he used to go in early to use the air conditioning, and so he'd sit there in the afternoon and watch anime or something before his shift. And so he was always in the theater, and we would go in and do our lights, and he'd be sitting up there with his earbuds in, and he was in the theater. Even though there was no air conditioning, I really haven't found out why he was there. Maybe he thought it was the electricity was going to turn back on. We all did. It always just turned back on, you know? They had fires. It was horrible sometimes, but they always got them fixed, and they never came into Lahaina proper.
It was always up in the mountains?
Always up in the mountains and the hills, the foothills, and where all the dry brush was. And so he was sitting there, and he smelled smoke. And he opened the door and just saw the place was filled with smoke. And he got out. And if I believe I'm correct, he had to climb out the window to get out and hop off the roof down to Front Street. You know, it was a 10-foot high roof and a little awning thing. And he had to go into the ocean because the wind was blowing so strong, the smoke was so strong, and the heat was so powerful that it was forcing everyone into the ocean. Wow. And there's a little wall along the ocean about, I don't know, thigh high. And so people were hiding behind this wall, and eventually it got too hot and they had to go into the ocean. And he was in that water for 6-7 hours.
Wow.
He drowned once, and his friend rescued him. His friend drowned once, and he rescued him. And they finally got out, had to swim about a mile. And they got out.
They were out there treading water?
Treading water.
Oh, my gosh. So it wasn't like they were like hip deep. I mean, they were out.
No, they're out treading water. Oh, and he even told the story that what was happening was all the ashes and burning embers were falling on the water. Mm-hmm. And the water would putting out, so they're dodging the ashes and the burning embers coming there.
Wow.
Again, they're coming sideways, right? If you look back at some of those videos. But he said what happened—
Because of the wind. Sideways, yeah.
But what happened is the ash built up on the water. And so now these embers were not burning out. They were swimming, and they were having to push everything away from them.
I can't imagine that.
No, and it just a horrific story. And people lost their lives. He saw people burned alive there.
Who were burned alive and drowned.
And
wow. So sad.
It was so sad, and I don't mean to take it in this direction, but I want the people to understand how horrific it really was on that spot. The tears, people crying. Just looking for food, looking for relatives, looking for help. Our friend Adrian went into a shelter, dripping wet, covered in ash. And as he walked in, they said, "We're abandoning the shelter. Come with us." And he had to go to another shelter because that shelter burnt down. And yeah,
because the fire was still moving.
Fire was moved, and it was a tragic incident.
There's no safe place, it sounds like, anywhere.
Not in Lahaina, no. You had to get away from there. And so my wife and I finally, this tells you what kind of boss Warren is. So my wife and my son's tickets, grandson's tickets, were free tickets that I'd used with mileage, right? Mm-hmm. So now I've got to try to find tickets back when the whole island is trying to find tickets at the same time. And I'm specifically with Hawaiian Airlines. That's what my thing is with, and my free tickets are with. So I'm trying to get a hold. You can't even get through to them. So we went around to the other side of the island, and David put us up in his house. And so while we were there, we got on the phone, and Warren said, "Find a flight. I don't care. I'll pay for it." And so I no longer had to just stick with Hawaiian. I just started looking for flights for three people to get off the island. And we found one a few days later. But now we're in a safe zone. You're on the other side. We're staying with David.
Right.
And we have our grandson with us. So we ended up staying with David for a while. We just continued to entertain our grandson. But it was surreal. We were had a fog in my head, I guess would be the best way to describe it. Still going, I can't believe it's gone. We were actually the first, my wife and I were the first to see it because they weren't letting anyone drive out the south way. They had shut it. And I once again talked my way to a police officer and explained how I'd been here 15 years at Warren and Annabelle's and I just needed to see it. And he took pity on me and he said, "Okay, but you know."
He let you in?
Yeah, this, that, and the other thing. We were able to only view it from what's called the upper road. They weren't letting anyone into the actual city of Lahaina. In fact, they just opened that about a month ago, the actual road through Lahaina.
And that's been a full year?
Yeah, it's been a full year.
Yeah.
August 7th or 8th, I believe it was.
Hey, Petey.
And we ended up going home and it was shocking. And it wasn't until about a week later that I made a post on Facebook. I'm not a big Facebook guy, and I made a post, and it was when I was reading it back, I just broke down in tears. I'm getting emotional now. I just broke down in tears because it was such a part of our life. It was more than a job.
To see something quite literally end within minutes.
In minutes.
Yeah. I mean, it wasn't like, it was overnight, but I mean, still, for the reality to hit you, it wasn't until you got back to mainland, I guess.
Yeah, it really, really wasn't. And to this day, I was at the castle on the palace stage on the 1 year anniversary. Hmm. And I said something because the castle was awesome. They gave us work right away. They donated money to a GoFundMe we had, mm-hmm. and they were great. So I thanked the castle on stage. I got emotional there. It's just, it's buried. I don't know if all the guys feel this way, but for me, it just hurt. It was fun. I was a king there. You know, yeah. It was kind of just great. It was a great place to perform magic.
Right.
Just a wonderful
Well, it was
place.
Part of your life for so many years,
yeah.
and something that you did on a regular basis, and you'd, again, develop family and friends there, and just kind of felt like, I'm going to be retiring here, you
yes.
know, basically doing this.
Yeah, that's
know,
exactly
just,
what we thought,
shows
my wife
that,
and I.
I guess the temporariness of life, or the how things are always fluid, and you just don't know what's going to happen.
You don't know, and... it was an eye opener to me too. You know, I prep a little bit, and I've prepped a little bit more because I realized it was a natural disaster. Although, don't get me started on that. Mm-hmm. That's a whole nother subject. It was weird.
Did they find out what started it?
Oh, they said it was some downed electrical lines.
Okay,
but there's too many coincidences.
There are other things that
that's a whole nother podcast.
Okay.
that's a rabbit hole.
Another conspiracy.
That you would lose listeners on possibly.
Okay.
It was just a surreal experience, and I personally lost all my equipment. Everybody lost their equipment because it all burned down.
And what kind of equipment do you have as a close-up guy?
Well, I mean, I'm not really a close-up guy. It's more of a parlor situation in the sense that, you know, I had, and here's the other thing. I had another set of magic there. I was swapping out things. So we all had two sets of magic.
Mm-hmm.
Kept one at home, kept one at Warren and Annabelle's.
Yeah.
And I brought mine with me because I was going to swap out a whole bunch of stuff.
Oh.
You know,
your stuff there. Both.
All my stuff.
Okay.
Lost it all. Lost two card swords, my straight jackets. I had a couple straight jackets. I had you know, to this day, Scott, I still look in my bag and I go, where's my, oh, yeah, okay. You know, and we just had stuff accumulated there. You know, we'd play with magic tricks and just keep them in our closet there, you know, our locker, and just had stuff there. You know, all my clothes, my suits, you know, my performing suits, and we're all there and all that stuff. And all our guys lost what they ended up with the fire, what they ended up getting out of the ashes. Griffin, Warren and Lisa's son went back there, were some coins. That John George has custom coins made, a few coins, a stack of pamphlets that had melted together.
Oh, I was going to say, come they didn't?
Yes, I know. They had kind of melted together. And some of the keys from his magical entrance to the theater. You needed a key.
Mm-hmm.
So that's all he really got out of it. That's all that was left. That's all that was left.
And it wasn't because there were the police were keeping looters.
And no one could get in there. There was nothing to loot.
It was tight.
There was nothing to loot. If you look at those pictures, there's nothing to loot.
Yeah. The pictures I did see, I mean, it was just twisted metal. It looked like 9/11. Some of the pictures of the aftermath of the Twin Towers of twisted metal. And
I'm sorry, I interrupted you, Scott. That twisted metal, that was Warren and Annabelle's. That famous shot you see of that thing, that is where that building starts sloping into the ground. That slope was Warren and Annabelle's.
Oh.
It just literally fell upon itself and just clapped upon itself.
Wow.
And my wife, when we would watch video, she goes, he's going to say it. That was Warren and Annabelle's right there. He's going to say he said it.
Man. Well, has the city started to grow back or to rebuild? I mean, even knowing that Warren and Annabelle's is not going to be going back, I mean, will Fleetwood's open, or have you talked with any others? Have you been back since?
Well, no, I haven't been back since.
Can you, or do you think psychologically is
I psychologically I'll be fine now. I mean, maybe at a moment there I'll be sad.
Sure, of course.
What have you. But I don't know if I want to go back for a while. It still hurts. I talk to David regularly, and David lives there, and he says they are, you know, some permits are being issued, but things are moving slowly.
Mm-hmm.
It's still sad. They, you know, there's a term, Hawaii time. It's true.
Mm-hmm.
Hawaii time is slow.
Slower.
And their government's even slower.
Mm.
So, they are very slow.
But they should know which where their bread is buttered. And I mean, that was a big tourist town, obviously, and it probably brought in a lot of money. And so I would think they would put that back into action as soon as possible.
To not get into too much politics, tourism is a touchy subject there. While it's their bread and butter, a lot of people aren't thrilled with it on the island.
Okay, I understand.
So when COVID hit, when the lockdowns, the shutdowns were put into a place, they were a little bit happy. The beaches,
to keep people away.
The beaches were empty. Yeah, the beaches were empty. The roads were clear.
Yeah.
The tourists.
So it's a two-edged sword.
Those who make their living off of tourism, no, of course not.
But
some of the people, you know, but that's a whole other story.
And it's,
And
so is Warren going to be doing something else on the mainland or anything?
We talked about it, and ideas were thrown around to do a show in a tent over back in Maui. And, you know, one of those nice tents they have, you know, those things. And he had some plans for that and some other things, but no. He was going to retire anyway.
I was thinking he was nearing retirement. He was probably looking for an exit strategy. I mean, this is a horrible one, obviously.
But, yes.
Maybe of selling it or doing something, I would imagine, from what I had understood.
Yeah, and he's retired now.
Yeah.
You know, and he's having a good time in retirement. He lives in South Carolina, where we're here. So he's about 4 hours away.
Yeah. You know?
And he was a great boss. So he took care of us. I had to go home one time for a heart condition, and that didn't faze him. He, you know, I said, just tell me what I owe you back pay, you know, whatever. He goes, no, you're paid. Don't worry.
Yeah.
He paid when COVID came in, he paid us for a while, you know, and he just took care of us. He always cared. If we had a family issue, take care of your family first. He would always tell us, take care of your family first. We'll figure out the show, you know, and there were times, you know, and it put strain on the other performers too, because like I had to go home one time in the middle of a run, because of my heart. And, fortunately it wasn't an issue, but John George had to take over and, you know,
do both
spots. And so you basically go from a 2 hour show to about an hour 40 show by one person. Mm-hmm. And that's a long time to do. Time to do for one person.
Yeah.
And I've had to do it a few times. John Schirock's had to do it a couple times. I don't know if Dana, I think Dana, of course, Dana probably had to also on there. But yeah, it was a great time. It was a great experience. A lot of magicians wanted to work there. It was very hard to get Warren to agree to even let someone audition.
Why is that? Because he felt like he was going to be bumping out some part of the family?
He goes, I got my guys. His loyalty was very important, because we were loyal to him, because we would give up corporate events.
And lucrative opportunities.
Because now he paid us well, don't get me wrong, but you know how corporate events can be. They can be very lucrative, and you can get 3 weeks of pay in a day, you know?
Yeah.
And, but he always treated us so fairly and all. And he, I don't want to say demanded, but expected from us 100% every single night, never phone in a show. It taught me so many things about fighting for an audience. Because...
Like what?
As Dana and I were the second performer of the night. Mm-hmm. Okay. So the first performer in the first show, no big deal. But the second show meant that we're coming on about 10 p.m.
Okay.
Okay. So they've just seen an hour. They've been out all day in the sun.
They're hot and tired.
They're hot.
They probably had a few drinks.
Had a few drinks. They got a full belly now. They've just watched an hour of magic. And you come out. You're the second guy. And here's what's even... a little tougher. They love the first guy, and they should, because they're great entertainers.
Sure. Yeah.
So now you got to come up
and prove yourself. Yeah.
And they're tired, and they don't always give the same energy as they did. And you can see as the clock progresses, you can see yawning, and you can see eyes blinking. And you even see a head nod off every once in a while, which was illegal in Hawaii because we served alcohol. You're not allowed to sleep in a showroom, so we would have to wake them up.
What?
Wait. There's some law in Hawaii that you're not allowed to fall asleep in a showroom. I've never heard of such a thing. I don't know why, but when people would fall asleep, we would have to wake them up. And
you didn't make jokes or things.
No, we never do that. It's because we get it. We get it. You know, sometimes after the show, I'd want to just fall right asleep, you know? But, So you would have to fight through those shows. And now, in the past, as a younger magician, I might have sped up just a little bit and talked a little bit faster and just kind of, you know, and maybe made a disparaging mark about the audience not being enthusiastic or involved. That was the younger self. Mm-hmm. But what I learned was how to stay your course, work your stuff that you know works every single night.
Mm-hmm. Solid material.
Solid material. You know, because you just did it 2 hours ago for an audience, that it works. Just stay your course, work your way, be patient, understand where they're tired, be enthusiastic, grab a little more energy for them, you know, give yourself a little more energy for them and all that, and fight for them. And sure enough, you find yourself in that last 20 minutes, they're turning. They're like, oh my goodness, they're waking back up again. Mm-hmm. Almost like they know, you know, and it's like, it was a wonderful experiment, because you had the same conditions every night, year round, the same conditions. And so you could understand audiences a whole lot better. And you really do understand how an audience gels and how they become divisive, you know, amongst an audience. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the dynamic of an audience, very important. They say there are no such thing as bad audiences, but sometimes there can be. Mm-hmm. There are just situations that makes the audience not be in a comfortable spot. Or
when I was working at the Magic Island, I remember Scott Hollingsworth, as the entertainment director, was saying there was a particular thing that I do, like a rock and shoe, that killed the audience. I mean, that's obviously a surprise thing.
Sure.
And that was something that I was doing in my regular show at the island at the time. And whenever I did that, the audience would just go nuts. And he said, I could tell that if the audience didn't react to that, it was the audience, not you. Because in other words, with the rest of the stuff that you were doing in the show, that seemed like it had low energy, the audience had low energy, even though you're trying to keep it up. If they didn't react in that, I knew then it's not Scott, that's the audience. And so there are bad audiences, or those who are listless.
Yeah,
you know,
listless. That's probably a good term. You know, and I'm a hard person to get to laugh, but when I'm watching another magician, I'm going to be the first guy to cheer and clap and encourage. Yeah, it was quite a fun, it was just a fun place to do things. You could experiment with things, you know, because you had an hour. And so you could run 55 minutes of your pure solid material, and then somewhere in there sneak in something new.
Yeah.
Try to do
see
it.
How that works.
Now, we never did that as much as we said we would.
Yeah.
But,
well, it's a good place to work things out. That's the thing, is that most magicians, I would say majority of magicians today, don't have a place to be bad, if you will, somewhere where you can work out something.
Exactly.
Where you can still do your solid material, but then slip in something that's like, see if that works, and you can keep working on it all the time. Mm-hmm. Most people don't have a magic island or a castle or someplace where they can work on such a regular basis, or a Warren and Annabelle's. I mean, you were really in a unique position to finally hone your act to make it a world-class act.
Absolutely. That's actually what happened. I don't know if it's a world-class act, but I appreciate that. Repetition was good, but the repetition could also be bad, in the sense that you could get into a mundane groove if you weren't careful.
But the audience would tell you if you were in a mundane.
Oh,
you had to be fresh.
You had to be fresh. Yeah. You had to be fresh in there. I guess it was more offstage. You were getting in a kind of mundane groove, I guess. Because it would sometimes feel like Groundhog Day a little bit.
Right.
You know, you're doing it over and over and over.
I remember standing backstage one time with Mercer Helms. He was getting ready to go on stage with his Dove act. And as they were introducing me, he said to me, "Time to mail it in." It's like, you know, man, it's not quite the right attitude.
Not quite the right attitude. I have a different approach. And here's maybe a possibly funny story. I'm a Christian man, and before I go on stage, I always thank God for the gift he gave me.
Say a prayer.
Okay? And I also say the word love smile, because I want to love the audience, because I can be cantankerous and sarcastic. I get by on, I'm very quick-witted, in the sense that I think it's a gift, honestly, from God. So, but my challenge was to bite my tongue and not be snarky and mean.
It's easy to be.
Yes, very, very easy to be. So I would say love smile, and it would remind me to love the audience and to smile. Just smile. You get that smile on your face. Because we are actors. Mm-hmm. I mean, we've all heard horrible news, or something bad happens right before we go on stage.
Right.
But you go on stage, and as a professional, no one knows that these things happen. But ironically, I'm sorry. And the third thing I would do is, in my head, I just go, have a blast. You never know. Could be your last show. Always would say that to myself. Have a blast. Could be your last show. I didn't say it that night to myself. that last show I did at Warren and Annabelle's. I did not say that to myself. Because I remember during the show, I went, oh, I didn't say that to myself.
You never know.
You never know. You never know when it could be your last moment. Look at, you know, poor Siegfried and Roy, and, you know, there you are. You're at the, you know, you're beyond your peak. You're above your peak.
Right. And you keep going from peak to peak.
From peak to peak, and boom.
I used to work a restaurant for like 20 years, and as I was walking into the restaurant from my car, I would slowly smile until I got to the front door. I had just the biggest beam on my face, just kind of pumping myself up and saying, kind of like what Thurston did behind the curtain, saying, you know, looking at the audience, I love you, you know, he would look at the audience. And the same thing, and I was like, I'm going to have a good time, and I'm going to make sure people enjoy this. And I wanted to come in with a fresh attitude and just a big smile on my face. And so, same kind of thing.
Jeff Hobson's place out in La Quinta, Marvin's, for the great Marvin Roy. There's a big light bulb in the back room.
That was his. It was Marvin's.
Yeah, and it's kind of a souvenir thing. And I don't know if it was Marvin. Anyway, Jeff wants all the guys to autograph it and sign it. So I don't think it's an
probably
actual
not his,
relic. Right. Yeah,
he wouldn't be touching a museum.
No. Like there's that. A lot of good Marvin stuff there. And we all wrote, you know, witty little things on there. And I don't remember the gentleman who wrote it, and I'm paraphrasing it poorly, but it said, this could be someone's first magic show. This could be someone's last magic show. This could be your last match, something to that effect. And it kind of hit me like, yeah, you know, we got to remember in the audience what we do, okay? Sure, we're magicians and we're sitting there thinking about our double lift and, you know, our slides and what we can do this and what funny gag we have out there. But I know from my years that people have come up to me after ships and many times at Warren and Annabelle's with tears in their eyes, thanking for the laughter and the joy that was presented because they haven't been able to laugh because of someone died or someone has cancer or some situation like that. And it really puts you on an even keel to remember we're here to take away life for just a little bit for these people. We're here to give them some fantasy, some enjoyment. We're in a theater named Wonders right now. We're to give them some wonder in life. And it's good to remind yourself of that. As a performer,
I had a situation when I was working in the close-up room at the castle one time, and there was an elderly couple from England who had come over, and they said they had saved their whole lives to come over to the U.S. and travel, and they came into New York, and they'd come across, but their ultimate bucket list thing they always wanted to do was to go to the Magic Castle. And so, I mean, they'd spent all their money and they may have saved all their money to do this. This was an ultimate of their life experience, basically. And they're in my magic show. And you talk about pressure. I'm thinking there should be that kind of pressure the magicians think about all the time. It's like, you don't know who's in the audience, but exactly what you said, someone may be suffering from cancer or whatever it is, or they're worried about a bad diagnosis or something at work or what, or family or whatever it is. Everyone has their own problems. And if they come to a magic show, they come there to get rid of that. And even if they don't go to a magic show and you're doing something on an impromptu basis, when you're walking up to them and introducing yourself at a table or something, you're doing something for them that you are perhaps altering their life and giving them an experience that they'll remember. You just have to think about what we are giving people, because the ripple effects sometimes are more than that. It's just like throwing a boulder in the water, because it's a huge tsunami you could cause in someone's life.
You're absolutely correct. And we were reminded often how blessed we were in the sense that some of these people saved their whole life for a Hawaiian vacation.
For a vacation that was their one.
We're here going, traffic's bad. Or, you know, I didn't get the room I wanted at the condo. You know, and these people are here saving their money. And someone just flew me out for free, gave me a car and a condo. And all I got to do is make people laugh. Mm-hmm. You better be on your game.
Right.
You know, and they're paying me to do this.
Sure.
You know, you be on your game and you make these people's evening with you just enjoyable as can be.
Boy, you said it all right there. Well, I'm going to wrap this up then. And the reason I call that the magic word is because I always like to know what it is that is inspirational. What's an inspirational word, or what do you use to kind of keep you going that you could give the listeners?
Oh, my goodness. Oh, I'm going to give him my word. Love Smile.
I knew that's where you were going. When you said Love Smile earlier, I was thinking that was what you were going to say. I love
it. Yeah, love your audience and smile because you are blessed to do what you do. I'm 64 years old. I turn 65 next week. And I'm so sorry it took me this long to realize how lucky and blessed and fortunate we are to do what we do. It's just, you know, we do the corporate events and we see how some people, you know, live their lives on a 9-to-5 job and things like that, that doesn't fit for us. So everybody out there, remember how blessed you are to that we create magic.
To do what we do.
To do what we do.
Yeah. Love Smile.
Love Smile.
Absolutely love that. Thank you, Chris. I appreciate it a lot.
Scott, what a pleasure.
It's my pleasure, my friend.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Magic Community.
So for the Magic Word Podcast, I was Chris Blackmore. This is Scotty out. Well, I want to thank Chris Blackmore for being my guest here this week. It was fun getting a chance to get caught up since we haven't seen each other for so many years since, again, we talked briefly about the Magic Island way back in Houston back in the 80s, so many years ago. And I'm glad that you have been doing well, and I wish you continued fortune and success on cruise ships and with other corporate adventures that you're working on. So good luck into the future, and I wish everyone else who is listening to this a happy and safe new year into 2025. And I wish you joy, happiness, peace, and prosperity as well as health. That's a lot to wish for, but any one of those would be great, wouldn't it? If we have them all the better. It's at least a good thing to wish for. And I wish that for each of you. And I thank you very much for listening to the Magic Word Podcast during this past year. I'm looking forward to coming into the new year with a lot more podcasts, and I'm going to be attending a lot of conventions where I'll have an opportunity to actually chat with a few more people as we get into these other places like Blackpool, and I'm going to be going to Magi Fest, and I'm going to try Abracadabra. I've not been to that yet this year. Of course, FISM is going to be coming up in Turin, Italy, and obviously I can't miss the 4F convention nor the Texas Association of Magicians convention. I mentioned the convention of the Magic at the Beach in Myrtle Beach. I'll be there, be at Tricks. So I was just about to say I'm going to be cutting back on conventions, but it doesn't sound like it, does it? So perhaps I'll see you at one of those conventions coming up in 2025. So until next week, stay well, get booked, and remember to always wear your love smile. This is Scotty out.